Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Vince Lamb. Oh, hang on a second. Hello, this is Vince Lamb, and I'm hosting the series tonight on the interviews for candidates for the Coffee Party USA Board of Directors election, which is coming up later this month. And on tonight's show, we have scheduled Eric Winery, who is running for treasurer, and Jose Gutierrez, who's running for that large seat, and Janine Loudon, who's running for secretary. And I believe we have Eric on right now. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hi, Eric.
Thanks.
How you doing?
Oh, okay. How's everyone tonight?
Right now on the show, it's just you and me who've called in, but we're all fine. I was calling, and I apologize for running a bit late. This is the very first time I've run the show. And I looked up, and the only number that showed up was the guest call-in. So I called in the guest call-in and went, oh, I can't get in. And all of a sudden, the host number pops up. So that's why you're waiting. I was going through make sure I was getting the right number and all that. Things happen. Anyway, Eric, the question I have for you is, I'd like to have you introduce yourself to the listeners as we have so far, and tell us about your background and a little bit about how you got involved with the Coffee Party.
Okie dokie. My name is Eric Winery, and I currently live in Chicago, Illinois, but born and raised in St. Louis, so go Cardinals. But anywho, my background, I've got my education background is in corporate finance, and I've got about 20 years or so in accounting and finance and tax background, as well as a little sidetrack to IT and then operations management and IT. And then for about the past 5 or 6 years or so, I've been a financial analyst with a specifically tasked with IP budgeting and IT budgeting and forecasting and all that kind of, all the stuff that goes along with that. So did I say go Cardinals? So go Cardinals.
Yeah, and I can sit there and say that my wife is actually from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll say, go Cubs, right, dear? Yeah, she's nodding her head. But we're now living in Detroit. So it was really interesting last night when it was the Lions against the Bears, and the Lions won, much to everyone's surprise.
Yeah. So the Coffee Party, how did I get involved in the Coffee Party, you'd like to know?
Oh, yes.
Coercion and blackmail. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
we don't do that.
Like a lot of people over the past few years have been very, very frustrated with our political environment in the anger and the disappointment with the Congress that was so divisive my viewpoint that the country was kind of heading in the wrong direction towards war, towards income inequality, and all this other and all the other problems that we're facing today really kind of boil over to a head, after the 2008 election, the response to the Obama presidency, in the naked and open dishonesty, hatred and divisiveness, that was coming out of that, after the vote, and not just from one side, and really both sides seem to have geared up and a lot of partisan bickering and anger and frustration. So we have a situation where the sides are not, communicating, and I caught wind of an interview that Annabelle had done on CNN, Annabelle Park had done on CNN a while back. I went online, saw it, watched that, and I specifically joined Facebook, something I swear I'd never do, to get involved with the Coffee Party movement, because that's where it was. From that point forward, I met Annabelle in Chicago When she came out to meet a group up here in Rogers Park on the north side of Chicago. And then I've slowly, through the Facebook community, I made some connections and then attended the convention in September of last year and really kind of fell in love with the vision and the movement after, and especially having made connections with a lot of the people around the country. Who had attended that convention, and the next thing you know, I'm running for treasurer. Really, that's kind of how it all happened. And so
well,
here I am, for what it's worth.
Well, you've actually, to be honest, you are currently the treasurer, and in fact, you were the treasurer on the very first version of the board. And did that come out of your the experience you had at the convention?
Well, not necessarily. Actually, it wasn't on the interim board that was selected that came out of the convention. I kind of filled into that, I kind of filled in that step after a bit of reorganization, I guess, in the January, February timeframe that we came from. But, you know, my involvement with the national team really sort of took shape. In planning for the events in January, the meeting with people on the Citizens United anniversary, made some more contacts, and though I wasn't able to attend the event, I began to work on that, and through that work and through those contacts, when the position of the former treasurer had stepped down, I had an opportunity to move in and fill that position.
Because but the callers may not, we're both in the transition team together, and I didn't get on the transition team until it was formed in March. So at the time, you were already there, so I had no idea, and I wasn't actually paying close attention to what the leadership was doing until I was recruited in January. No, I was actually recruited at the end of December and saw your name already up there. So I had no idea how long you were up there. I thought you were there getting the board. Okay, that's worth knowing that you are.
Yeah. Well, I'm having so much fun that time flies. It could have been that far back. I mean, so much has gone on and so much has happened with the development of the Coffee Party, and so many things politically have gone on. Movements have started and movements have ended and, various other things that, it's really easy to lose track of time with all the activity and all the stuff going on. So, pretty crazy world we live in these days,
So. The only response I have to that is, I feel like saying you have no idea, but the answer is I think we do.
We do. We get a really good cross-section of folks and a lot of different viewpoints here in the Coffee Party, and it's a great place to come together and share those viewpoints, but, the pure diversity of opinions and backgrounds and media opinions and things like that really kind of make it really hard to have a concerted plan and a concerted ideology. Not that we should have a concerted ideology or unified, but there should be some compromise, some area in there where a little bit of what one side wants and a little bit of what the other side wants, can come together and make things right.
What you're addressing is that the Coffee Party is a trans, not only a nonpartisan organization, but a transpartisan one. And would you have a thing for our listeners about what your idea of a transpartisan organization is?
Well, not to put myself at odds with the other Coffee Party leadership, but I almost view it as post-partisanship rather than transpartisan. Yeah, we want to welcome Republicans and Democrats and Independents and Green Party, but the party ideology really gets in the way. And what I view, at least in my opinion, is that the Coffee Party is an opportunity to kind of hit that sweet spot that moves beyond partisanship to where we are, where we see ourselves as American people, the American people with a common, common goals, and common, a common direction, Even though we are a very diverse country, you know, it really boils down to it. You know, those of us who want to work, we, you know, some of us like to work. Some of us would like to be retired. Some want to play sports. You know, there's a broad variety of activities and things that we have going on. But we are, you know, it really comes down to it. You know, we need food. We need shelter. You know, we need health care. We need, you know, we have the same basic needs. And the you know, and the divergence is really how do you get to that point, you know, where the majority of Americans can have those, you know, can have not those luxuries, but those necessities, you know, because it's really hard to, you know, view yourself as a free individual when you're trapped in a job because of healthcare, or you can't find a job to begin with. You know, you're very limited in what your options are. And I think that you know, what the Coffee Party represents is an opportunity to build those bonds, not only from, you know, a trans person, but to move beyond those, the partisan label to begin with.
Oh, very good. Now, I have a question about, you know, so you're running for the Treasury. You have a extensive background in finance and accounting. So, you know, obviously you're qualified for the position, but would you like to explain to the listeners what exactly you have been doing and you will be doing as Coffee Party Treasurer in the board?
Sure. I've been representing the finance, kind of the finance and accounting, you know, back work, as well as reconciling the bank account, helping to pay the bills, and various other things. And I will also get involved in duties as treasurer, you know, in doing all of the financial reporting, you know, helping to set financial policy as far as, you know, cost controls, transparency models, approval levels, you know, for expenses, as well as doing budgeting and forecasting based on the money that we have coming in, so that we can, you know, maximize the impact that we can have. In addition to that, I'm acting on the transition team as the chair of the development and work group, which is development fundraising, which we are, you know, is kind of tasked with, at least this time, preparing and maintaining and presenting the budget, you know, tracking expenses and actuals, you know, actual expenses versus what we have budgeted, as well as working on developing a long-term, you know, fundraising plan. So that the Coffee Party is viable into the future, to be able to do, you know, do the types of organization and provide the types of organizational support, you know, that it needs to maintain a long and impactful, you know, life as a good thing.
Okay, that's very good.
One thing we've been involved with is, and I think that this will make a lot of Coffee Partiers happy, is when we first stepped on this, we had our bank accounts for Bank of America, and we are in the process here in the next few days of closing the Bank of America account and moving off to a smaller regional bank that you know, doesn't have the investment house background, you know, didn't you know, get involved in the top breakdown of the bad mortgages, you know, problems, and kind of kept their nose clean, to go back to a community-based bank, really away from the behemoths that are at the core of our economic problems.
Well, that's right. That's definitely worth hearing. I myself, my wife and I, are in the process of moving away from Bank of America as well. We're in the process of moving our accounts and our direct deposit from Bank of America to a local credit union. So we're putting our money where our mouth is. We've been complaining about Bank of America for more than a year now. And when the Bank of America announced they were going to institute the $5 per month fee for debit cards, that was the last straw. And we finally got off of the dime and actually went and moved our money. So, you know,
Company that had, what, like $14 billion in profits last year, they should pull them out.
And how much did they pay in taxes?
I don't believe that they paid it in income taxes. I'm sure they did. So
no.
There are ways we can look around that, so it's not really fair.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we actually had a campaign where we were actually looking for things like T-shirts and lawn signs that said, this sign cost more than Bank of America paid in taxes last year.
Yeah, I've seen that sign floating about. Yeah, it's the only ones. There are others. And, you know, these banks and these producers these guys that sell things and bring them to market, they use our infrastructure. They use our roads. They use our bridges. They rely on our sewer systems, our security forces, our military in some cases, if they're an international business. Without those things, they wouldn't be able to sell their products. If you look back at some of the major national retailers, if you look back at four major investments in highways, that the taxpayer did back in the 50s to create the internet, how difficult would it have been for a major retail to a regional retailer to expand into a nationwide retailer without those avenues of shipping, the ports, the riverways that the government maintains? It just basically created an environment for corporations like that to expand. In my own personal opinion, the idea that a corporation or a group of owners of a corporation, don't owe anything back to the federal government in way of maintaining that is pure nonsense. Many of those people would never, ever have gotten as rich as they are, as wealthy as they are without these investments, and they would have a really difficult time maintaining that wealth without continued investment. It's a bit of an unfair environment. I know I got off my soapbox there, so I don't know if that was fitting or not. But anywho, there it is.
Ah, okay. Well, also the other thing is that's just what the Bank of America owes in taxes. This is nothing about what Bank of America has done in terms of how they've handled people's mortgages and for trying to foreclose on people's mortgages as well.
Yeah, no, that's they've gotten their caught in the cookie jar taking shortcuts on legal paperwork. When it comes to taking someone's house, you don't want. That may be the most egregious abuse of their situation as it is. Misfiling paperwork and it's not the consumer's fault that necessarily that their loans were sold and then repackaged and sliced and diced, and now that nobody really knows who holds the mortgage or whatnot. But it also shouldn't be on the consumer's back or the homeowner's back to just straighten that mess out either. Until you can identify who the owners are or what the value of the property is, you shouldn't be able to run those foreclosure paperwork, to be so hard on so many people, and especially when if it's not something you really want a company to make a mistake with. That's a lot of folks' livelihood.
Yeah. And so that's one of the things that I'm glad we're doing. So we're actually putting our money where our mouth is with Bank of America. Is there anything else that we're doing with our money that is putting our money where our mouth is? Say, like the Enough is Enough March.
Yes, we have the Enough is Enough March going on. I think that here we go with my own personal take and my own personal opinion, having been at the core of the transition team and the movement. From the time that the membership campaign kicked off and a lot of folks, put their trust in the Coffee Party, I think that that was really a mandate, for us to act, to have an impact. And a lot of people have been putting a lot of time into getting the organizational structure in place, behind the scenes to support the local chapters, to get our legal and financial and tax house in order. To make sure that we could operate as a viable unit, on the other hand, there's a huge opportunity to have an impact here and bring some real grassroots effort to bear to help people restore their voice you know, in our government. It's something, you know, it's like everybody in Washington has their ears stuffed with, you know, corporate special interest money to the point that they can't or don't care or just are simply unable to listen to the people. And, you know, it's a sad situation. And it's a lot of problems. I mean, can the government, you know, fix all of our problems? Probably not. But they certainly could help, you know, kind of nudge things in the right direction. And while they sit back in paralysis, you know, there are a lot of people who are suffering. More people are being pushed into poverty, homelessness. More people are going hungry, you know, in the richest country in the world. You know, so we, you know, as the Coffee Party saw an opportunity, a need, you know, for people to be able to get there, you know, to have their voices heard. And to, you know, to vent their frustrations, you know, to Congress, you know, directly. And, you know, so we provide that opportunity, you know, and we'll continue to provide that opportunity, you know, as we go forth, you know, in creating a, you know, kind of a civil area, a place where people can come and engage, you know, in unison, you know, get their voice back, you know, to try to help save this democracy that, you know, that we all treasure.
We have another caller on the line. Let's see if the other caller wants to ask a question. Hello.
Hello.
This is?
This is Leah.
Oh, my goodness. Never mind. I'll just let you listen.
No, I had a question for Eric. I was just wondering if he could just kind of... if he wanted to share with how he saw the Coffee Party moving next year and his role as treasurer, just kind of maybe touch on that a little bit. You know, where do you see the Coffee Party next year and how do you see your role playing out as treasurer next year?
Sure. As a the Coffee Party in the next year is positioned to be able to you know, to help organize and help support, you know, local chapters. So I'm really hoping over the next year that we will continue to grow, you know, not only from a membership, but a numbers aspect, but the number of chapters that we have acting, you know, in local areas and helping to organize the people in their communities to step forth and have, you know, have an impact to help, you know, work at that, at that community level amongst their peers, and I see that the Coffee Party building an infrastructure that will be there, you know, to support, you know, those local chapters in that effort without necessarily, you know, pushing down an agenda, but allowing them to have some autonomy, you know, but while also, you know, providing them, you know, the legal and, if necessary, maybe some financial and support and organizing support, you know, and training and the various other things that we could do as a national level for movement. Another thing that I would see the Coffee Party do that would be to get more involved on a national scale as far as, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, 400,000 or 500,000 people in diverse communities across the nation, but it's really quite another to provide the vehicle, you know, that's needed for all of these people to just say with a common voice that, you know, we're not happy with the way things are going. We don't feel you're hearing us. We certainly don't feel that you are, you know, addressing the problems or representing us as you were elected to do, you know, and I think, you know, that I would like to see that happen. So as treasurer, my position would, especially if I continue involved in development, would be not only to make sure that our bookkeeping is kept, you know, our bookkeeping is kept in line, but that we have, you know, some reporting and some transparency back to the board, to our board of directors who knows what's going on, and also to, you know, to try to help you keep track of the funds to make sure that, you know, we're adhering to our budget plan, as well as, you know, hoping to, you know, maybe get involved in helping to secure the funds that the party will need, you know, moving forward on a national level to to achieve all of these goals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Leah and Eric, we have another caller. Let's see who's on the line. Hello, new caller. Who is this?
Oh, goodness. Is it me?
Who's me?
Hello. Ah, well, this is Janine Loudon, and I guess I was waiting for my turn, but it's not quite 5 o'clock, so I was
I made a mistake. It's actually, it should be 5:30.
Well, then I'll just listen until 5:30.
Okay, thank you.
Excellent.
Oops, sorry to...
Hey, Janine, how are you?
Oh, geez. Janine, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Eric said hi.
Oh, hi, Eric.
Hey,
how are you?
Oh, I'm good.
Well, I'm enjoying your interview very much.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to hearing from you in a little bit. Do you have any questions for Eric?
I don't, but I have a great B of A story that I'll save so that I don't take his time.
Okay, good. In that case, Leah, I'll turn your mic off, and I'll let Leah ask a follow-up question if she wants.
No, I am good. I'm going to go back to the chat room, but I thank you, Eric, for answering that question for me. Thanks a lot.
No, and I hope that was a good answer. And I also want to take a second here to that Bank of America's name has popped up a couple times. I don't want to, indicate that they're in any way the end-all, be-all of evil corporation. When it comes down to it, there are their community bank as well, and I'm sure that there are some things that they do well, but they certainly have, they hold a huge amount of assets and a whole lot of sway over an awful lot of people, and they've been involved in some practices that are just don't seem to be on the up and up. They don't seem to be fair. They don't. In some cases, legal, not to level an accusation at this, but there you have it. So we need corporations. We need them to employ us. They need this to help us, focus our resources, and make some money for the owners. That's great. But, it's one thing to, have corporations making money, employing people, paying taxes. But it's really quite another to have them buying influence in our government. And taking a leadership role or a role of a ruling body over the people. And that is kind of a decision, kind of a fight that we as the Coffee Party can help wage against is getting our electoral process and our government back from individuals, or business representatives, who feel that they're more important than the American people are.
Eric, this has been a really good interview. Hold on a second. But the next person is scheduled to come on about now. I want to see if that next person is on the line. Hello? New caller on?
Hi. Yeah, this is Jose.
Hi, Jose. Okay, it's your turn. Eric?
Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you, Eric.
Good job. I'll be on it, and we'll go from there. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you very much, Eric. Bye.
Hey, bye.
Hi, Jose. Jose, you there?
Hello?
Hi, Jose. Welcome
Hello?
On to...
Hi,
Jose.
Vince?
Yes,
oh,
Vince, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It's Coffee Party's USA's channel, and I'd like to. You're running for an at-large seat on the Coffee Party Board of Directors. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. And I'd like you to introduce yourself to myself and to the listeners. Tell us a little bit about your background. And include that how you got involved with Coffee Party USA.
Sure. So obviously my name is Jose Gutierrez. I am running for the at-large position. And a little bit about myself. I graduated from Purdue University in May of 2011. At that time, shortly before I graduated, there was a hot immigration debate And basically, I'm from Indiana, and what the debate was, they're trying to pass SB 590, which was similar to SB 1070, an anti-immigration legislation bill. And so what I wanted to do was kind of get the word out there that, you know, there's this atrocious bill passing, and it's going to affect all community members, not just immigrants. And I wanted to let them know, you know, you're going to see it in your pockets too. It's going to affect your taxes, and you know, how are we going to pay for all this stuff? So I think a lot of people weren't really aware of what was going on. So I had seen the movie 9500 Liberty, and after seeing it, I thought it'd be a great idea to bring Eric Beiler and Annabelle Park to our campus and have them speak about the movie and speak about what they saw when they were making the documentary and how it relates to Indiana. So I reached out to them and I got them to come. And we had a great turnout. We had over 100 people there, which is a lot for college students because nobody ever goes to any of the events. So it was really a successful event. And afterwards, we kind of thought, you know, what can we do about this? Like, the first question someone asked was, like, how can I change this? How can I make a difference here? And Annabelle, Eric, and I started talking to them about, you know, what they can do locally. And we formed a group called Liberty Indiana. And with that group, we were able to call our legislators, you know, let our voices be heard. And we also had a march with over 1,000 people in attendance to protest SB 590. In the end, they ended up passing the bill, but they took out all, like, the negative verbiage that we were against. So it was kind of like a win, lose, I don't know. I guess we win both ways. So that's that. That's how I met Eric Beiler and Annabelle Park, and they introduced me to the coffee party. And ever since then, I've just been active in anything that Eric has suggested. So I know recently he suggested, and we kind of both agreed on forming a group called Somos Americanos, which is a kind of a bilingual group to kind of get the word out there to Latinos and you know, that kind of section of the population to help them more, to help them realize, like, you know, what are the issues that are affecting them and how they can participate politically. And so that's our next project that we're going to be working on. But I guess in the meantime, I'm running for at-large position for a coffee party. So that's a little bit about myself, and that's it.
Well, are you running a chapter right now, or are you just being one of our information activists?
So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a chapter, but it's a kind of like an informational activist. It's not on the Coffee Party website, but I'm kind of doing it on the side, and hopefully we can, like, merge the blogs into the Coffee Party website as well. So, and we're trying to kind of get the message out there that, and as far as immigration, of course, a lot of people feel that it's kind of against, you know, what we stand as humans, like black people from entering a country and such. But it, at the root of it, it also it's a monetary issue too, because we have, you know, big corporations, big companies, like penitentiary companies, trying to lobby and get these bills passed, and like it's affecting us because we're paying to send these people who are trying to become citizens to jail, and just feeding them, clothing them, giving them shelter, and you know, these are the companies that are lobbying to get these bills passed because they're making money off of it. So that's kind of like the whole picture that I'm trying to get around to people as well, is that, you know, if we're looking at it economically, it kind of ties in with the whole coffee party movement as well.
Well, yeah, one of the things that's behind SB 1070 in Arizona was that was a bill that was, like you said, sponsored by the for-profit prison industry, and was actually run through ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council.
Yep.
And that's not one of the things. That's what a lot of people didn't realize, that there was a money angle to this as well as an anti-immigrant angle to this.
Yeah. Yeah, and kind of these fear-mongering companies that are kind of appealing to that specific type of group and trying to get, you know, people like the Tea Party and all these other kind of, you know, anger-filled citizens, you know, riled up and protesting, oh, you know, it's illegal, it's illegal, it's illegal. But behind that, it's also what they're hiding is that monetary issue is like they're making money off of this. So that's pretty upsetting as well.
So this is the at the intersection of of both the human rights angle and the corporate influence angle. In fact, it's an example of corporate influence being used to make to profit off of people's fears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what it is. You know, you see it all the time. You see it in the news. I mean, you know, there's a specific station out there that it will just portray, you know, all the kind of negative fear instilled news broadcasting programs that they can. And, you know, people are unfortunately listening to that kind of stuff and they don't really see the real facts behind what the real motives are. And I guess as a position, the large position, I would try to kind of, you know, get that word out there and get people knowledgeable about, you know, what are the real facts. Let's look at the, you know, facts of what's going on behind these bills and, like, why we're trying to pass them.
That's good. Okay, I'm glad to hear that. You know, I'm up in neighboring Michigan, although I'm originally from Southern California.
Okay. Quite a trek.
So, what's that?
It's quite a trek.
Well, yeah. The risk of turning the interview to be an interview with me, I came here because the University of Michigan offered me a 5-year free ride to get a PhD, and
hey,
I decided not
deal.
To. Yeah. So you know, you're a Boilermaker, I'm a Wolverine.
But we're all part of the coffee party. We're all family here, right?
That's right. But that, and I decided to stay because this is I like living here better than Southern California. Weather is not everything. So, you got involved with the coffee party because you screened 9500 Liberty, the documentary that Eric and Annabelle made about the attempt to for a local government to clamp down on illegal immigration on a local level,
mm-hmm.
and how that just didn't work out for them.
Yeah.
And that's actually sort of a seminal thing, event that happened in the sort of the prehistory of the coffee party. In fact, have you gone onto the coffee party's YouTube site and gone through the history of the YouTubes?
I've seen, there are a lot of YouTubes there for them, but I haven't seen all of them. I was looking at some of the YouTubes that have, you know, how they started gaining momentum with the coffee party and like how 9500 Liberty kind of like branched them off into the coffee party, or is that right? Or is that how they got started with the coffee party?
Well, no, there's part of it, but the first video that everyone thinks is the first video was mm-hmm. the one of Annabelle sitting out there in the snow in Virginia, you know, in Washington, D.C. or Virginia on the square holding a cup of mm-hmm. coffee in the snow in February. But that wasn't the first one uploaded. It was an interview with an Arab American barber who said the Tea Party didn't represent him. That he felt excluded.
Right. Yeah.
So that's something that's sort of an undercurrent of that this is not that the Tea Party, this is a reaction to the Tea Party in terms of they're excluding people who aren't like them.
Yeah,
anyway,
I mean, I totally agree with that. No, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the Tea Party has a funny way of getting people together under, like, the same cause to kind of, like, take action against something. But at the same time, they're really excluding a lot of, you know, potential constituents that can really help their cause. And I think what the Coffee Party does is I don't think the Coffee Party is really the opposite of the Tea Party, but more of, like, a reaction to them and saying, like, come on, like, you got to wake up and look at the facts and, like, you know, include more dialogue, include more people in this conversation and, you know, kind of get the ball going to the right direction of, like, all right, let's look at what's really going on here and, you know, let's take the right path and, you know, make the right decisions based on facts and, you know, not on suspicions or whatever else we want to think.
Emotions.
Emotions, yeah.
Yeah. Now, so you got involved through 9500 Liberty, and you're running a blog about the intersection between immigration and corporate control. But I'm wondering, and you've talked about how you wanted to be an advocate for this position on the board of directors. Now, is there anything else that you want to do on the board of directors? And also, you know, what finally prompted you to run?
I think Annabelle and Eric are pretty young, and I feel like they've accomplished a lot in for their age. And I think when they came to our school, they really inspired a lot of young people my age to do something and take action and, you know, be more involved with politics and, you know, realize what's going on, what are the laws that are affecting their lives here in the States. And I think another position that I want to kind of go over is just getting more young people involved and, like, kind of getting them more involved with the whole political process and, like, helping them realize, you know, how they can make a difference and how they can participate in local politics or even on a national level. And along with that is getting, kind of a merger between immigration and, you know, new younger involvement with politics is the fact that, you know, we have a lot of people who are recent immigrants who have become naturalized citizens. And when you get people that are citizens for the first time, you know, they worked a long time to get to that level, and they're really excited and they're really motivated to be a part of a movement, be a part of something political, because they feel like they can make a difference. You know, they're fresh, they're new to the whole political system, so they want to be a part of it. And they're called new Americans. And I think one of my goals would be also to get those new Americans, you know, more involved with politics, because those are people that are, like, most engaged, the most, you know, active, most, you know, willing to, you know, do something, start a petition, get people to their house, get people all the information they need about, you know, whatever new issue is going on in the Senate or et cetera. So just getting more people involved with the whole political process is, I think, another ambition of mine as well.
Well, a lot of those people have to pass a test that a lot of native-born couldn't pass, even if they had to.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that you think
the
a lot
naturalization,
of the
naturalization test?
It's tough. It's my dad recently became a citizen. He was a resident here for about over 20 years, and he finally became a citizen after many years of, you know, paperwork and et cetera. So when he was taking a test, he was like, Jose, what's this article in 1775 when Jefferson talked about, et cetera, et cetera. And I was, you know, I was kind of dumbfounded. I was like, you know, Dad, I haven't taken a history class in so long, I don't know. And he was like, you know, spewing out facts left and right about things that, you know, I kind of, you know, take for granted. I've kind of forgotten. But yeah, it's really amazing how, like, motivated and how, eager they are to be a part of the American political system.
Okay, now I'm curious about where your father immigrated from.
Oh, so he immigrated from Mexico. Yeah, he came here when he was about 15. My mom was born here, and then he's been a legal resident for about, I don't know, over 20 years. And like I said, just recently, earlier this year, he became a citizen finally. So he's very eager and very motivated to vote in the next election. So
tell him congratulations for me.
Thank you. Yeah, I will. It was a very proud moment for him and for all of us.
Well, that's very inspiring. Now, I was wondering, do you have, so that's why you're running now, mm-hmm. and that's what you want to do with the board. Now, do you have, I know you talked about 9500 Liberty and Annabelle and Eric showing up to Purdue University, and you're getting a decent crowd of people there, and that got you excited. Do you have another coffee party story for the listeners and for me?
Well, that was my first kind of run-in with the coffee party. After that, you know, we formed that group, Liberty Indiana, and just by staying in touch with Eric and Annabelle, they kind of gave me good tips and good hints on, like, how to manage other people and how to get them involved with the political process. And just organizational-wise, there's a lot of tools, online tools that they're able to offer us. And I think that's a really good benefit to the Coffee Party that, they're kind of like a new age kind of political group where they're really utilizing a lot of the online tools like Blue State Digital and a lot of cool things online that just make, getting involved that much easier. So I think that's another plus for them as well.
So you're excited about them as a 21st century political tool that is run on social media.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's incredible how, if you look at the Middle East, how a group of young kids, can just get a bunch of people together, like using Facebook, Twitter, and it's really amazing, these online tools that we have now, and it brings us that much closer to the political process. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of young people using social media to organize online, you probably know this is coming. What do you think about the Occupy movements?
I live close to Chicago, and I just went to the Occupy Chicago rally, and it was great. It was really awesome to see a bunch of people that are getting together and protesting a single cause, and they're all in the same mindset of, they're thinking, we should have been talking about this 2-3 years ago about how corporations are just, overtaking the country and not really leaving anything for the average Joe to take advantage of. And, I think there's a lot of skeptics out there that are saying, oh, they're just a bunch of, hippies and, jobless kids who are just trying to get together and do something. But, there are a lot of people out there that are, they have jobs and they're trying to say, what about me? I pay my taxes. I didn't get a bailout. I'm not a corporation. Yet these corporations are not being punished for what they're doing. And I get a traffic ticket and all of a sudden I'm down $200. It's a lot of, it's really interesting to see what they're doing. I think it has more potential if you were a little more. I think it's amazing that though they don't have a leader, they have a general assembly and they're able to organize pretty efficiently. But I think if they had more direction in how to go about, getting more recognition, I guess. I don't know. It's a little conflicted right now because, at the same time, news organizations are not really talking about them. They're kind of just saying, oh, it's a bunch of people on Wall Street just kind of sitting there. They're not really talking about what the name of the organization is or, what they're trying to achieve or anything. So I think it does have a lot of potential. It's just it's amazing that they've gone this far so far and they're still going strong. So I think even in Chicago, they closed off a good part of Michigan Avenue, which is a huge, huge busy intersection, busy street in Chicago, and they closed off about 5 blocks worth. So.
That's impressive. I mean, everyone's busy looking at, Wall Street and D.C. and Boston, and Chicago got covered last night on The Ed Show on MSNBC.
Oh, wow.
He was in Chicago. NBC was there in Chicago for Meet the Press. They interviewed Mayor Rahm Emanuel, and then the next day Ed's there and he interviews the people of the Occupy Chicago movement and all the local labor organizations and other progressive organizations that have gotten involved with this, including the teachers union. And the teachers union gave the complete other side of the issue from what Rahm Emanuel gave. So they're getting so Chicago's getting some coverage. And I have a couple of notes. I have a couple of my own comments about it. One is that you said that people were going, wow, why didn't we do this 2 or 3 years earlier? And my take on it was that the people your age weren't quite ready for it 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, you know, that Unfortunately, I think you're right. I mean, that's another part of what I'm trying to do is, you know, get more young people involved and make them realize, look, we have a bunch of people our age, you know, occupying Chicago, like stopping traffic and getting recognition, you know, and getting our name out there. But if two or three years ago people were more involved with local politics or national politics, I think it would have been possible. But I think, yeah, you're right. We weren't ready for it. We weren't really sure what was going on, what were the causes, who was behind this, you know, what can we do about it. So, yeah.
Well, 2 or 3 years ago, actually 3 years ago in 2008, I saw where the energy of the young people went. Mm-hmm. It went, if it was going into politics, it was going into either the Obama campaign or the Ron Paul campaign. That's where young people were. Or if they were into protesting, it was, of all things, anonymous of 4chan protesting Scientology. And in fact, I got involved with some of those protests. And in fact, a lot of the same, when I saw Occupy, all these things with Days, U.S. Days of Rage and Occupy, a lot of the same people that were there organizing the protests against Scientology back in early 2008 were running this, right down to the Guy Fawkes masks and the anonymous, you know, headless guy in a suit.
Yeah.
So I've seen this movie before. So I'm not surprised at how it's working, because this is, it's like the people who are, the people who are going to be protesting activists started working their way up from Scientology up to bigger and better targets.
Yeah, that's definitely one way to put it. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you're always going to get those protesters protesting something, but I think a lot of people my age are genuinely, you know, concerned. And, you know, you see a lot of people my age who are, I just graduated college, and a lot of my other friends have graduated too, and people have even graduated with their master's degrees, and they still don't have jobs. And they're seeing that, you know, banks are getting million-billion-dollar payouts to their richest CEOs and making millions and billions of dollars, yet, you know, we can't fix our jobless rate, and we can't fix our healthcare system, and we can't fix our education system. And I think my generation's finally fed up, and they want to do something about it.
Yeah, you've been actually been trained to be a bunch of people who work well as a group, to work well with leadership. And right now, the promise was if you behaved, we'd deliver for you. And right now, the society is not delivering. And right now, you're not getting the leadership that you need. And so you're organizing yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think our generation is pretty similar to previous generations, where we think, you know, we have the American dream. If we study and work hard, you know, we're going to get the American dream, just like our fathers and our forefathers did. And it's just not a reality today. And I think that's really spurring a lot of anger and resentment right now.
Well, because if I'm looking at the list of candidates, you're probably the youngest person running for a seat on the board.
Age is just a number, Vince.
I know, but yeah, I'm 52, and I have a hard time believing I'm older than 40.
There you go.
But the whole point is, but you have the perspective of growing up inside the generation and being closer to your own generation's, you know, concerns. And one of the things you're pointing out is, in addition to talking about the intersection between corporate control and immigration concerns, you're starting to sound like you're an advocate for your generation as a whole in terms of, you know, where is the American dream for us? We have a bunch of people that are well-educated, that are want to work, and there's nothing, we're all dressed up, and there's no place for us to go.
Exactly, yeah.
And how do you feel like advocating for that?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think, you know, that is a central point of what I want to get the message out about, is like, you know, where are the jobs? You know, we did everything right. We did everything that we were told to do, and we followed all the right steps and followed the directions, and we don't have the results now. So, you know, I can totally relate. I have, you know, lots of people that I know, friends and family that are in that situation, and I can totally relate to them, and I do feel like, you know, I should be speaking out on behalf of them and helping them to get together and realize what kind of power they do have on the political system, and helping them realize how they can, you know, formulate some kind of change.
Okay. We have a caller. I think I know who this is, but I'm going to check to see if she has any questions.
Okay.
Hi, is this Janine?
No, this is Leah, and I do have a question for Jose.
Why do I keep thinking of someone else? Go ahead, ask a question.
Well,
hi, Leah.
Question. Hi, Jose. I think it's the first time I've talked to you. I have the same question I had for Eric Winery on the last interview. Where do you see the coffee party, you say, about this time next year, and then how do you see yourself playing a role on the board of directors in getting us to that place?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, the future is uncertain because to some point we don't really know where anything is headed. And but I think if we follow the same tracks and kind of follow the trends that are going on now, I think this time in a couple of years we should be reaching out to the younger constituents, new Americans, and recent voters who are eager to participate in the election process and, like, curious about, you know, what is the difference between the left and the right, and why is this bill, how does this bill affect me? And, you know, they're curious about the facts and curious about how they can play a role in politics. And I think it would be a wise decision to go after that and take advantage of their eagerness and, you know, have them, you know, be a part of the coffee party and its objectives. And I think as far as my role, you know, I would say that I can be a catalyst for that. I can help, you know, reach out to younger students and universities in at least in my area, and hopefully we can form chapters across the nation that can be in charge of reaching out to communities and you know, local universities that have a politically active group, and get them knowledgeable about what the coffee party is all about. Because personally, like, I just saw from experience that, you know, when Eric and Annabelle came to our campus, it was really amazing. It was like a huge light bulb just lit up the whole room, and everyone was like, ah, this is like, you know, I feel so enlightened. Like, I never saw this perspective before. Like, how could this be? Like, how can I get involved? And they're just, like, eager and thirsty to be a part of that movement. And I think capturing that eagerness is key.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Question.
We've got, it's now just about 8:30, and I'm going to go see, we have someone else calling in, and we're going to see if our next interviewee is on board.
All right.
Hello.
Hello.
Janine?
It is Janine.
Okay. Well, say this has been fascinating, but we have to move on.
No problem. Right. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, and looking forward to talking to you some more.
Likewise. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Janine. You're our last interviewee for the night.
Are you tired?
Not yet. I mean, actually, I've been getting a little more lively as the night wears on, but I don't think I could go for a fourth half hour just yet. Besides, I have someone here who would like me to join her, my wife.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I have a date. We're going to go play World of Warcraft. Or the equivalent.
There you go.
Anyway, Janine.
Yes.
So, for the benefit of our listeners, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you became involved with the coffee party?
So, do you want, like, the mini resume background and how that led to the coffee party kind of thing? I mean, unlike your previous caller, I am not young. I am, as a matter of fact, I very well could be his mother. I'm the oldest of six kids. I graduated from high school in 1969, and frankly, I am the American dream. I went to college at Oregon State University. I live in Corvallis, Oregon. I came here in 1969, and I've been here pretty much ever since with what I call field trips out. You know, I lived in Quantico for a while. I lived here and there a bit, but pretty much been here in Corvallis ever since then. And I've been gainfully employed most of my life. I started picking crops at the age of 8, and when I could get a work permit, I went to work in canneries and then basically put myself through school working in a meat packing plant. I was a card-carrying teamster. Ran a 25-ton printing press. I had a business forms company. But then when I graduated from college, my first professional position, of course, was an internship, and that was in hospital planning. My degree was in human health. Went on to be an emergency medical services planner with the Council of Governments, and then launched into occupational health and safety work with my first multinational. I was assigned to the Environmental Protection Agency, a research and development lab, and that was fascinating work with probably the greatest client in the world. And was picked up later by a second multinational who won that contract away from my first employer, and then slammed head on into the glass ceiling and decided that was not going to work for me. Formed my own firm, competed that contract, and launched my own company, and did that for many years, and retired some time ago. So that's kind of the occupational background. But, you know, that's not possible for my kids today, you know, to go to school on student loans that are affordable and paybackable. And I think I left school with $5,000 of student loans and wondered how the heck I was going to pay that back, you know. Tuition was $125 a term. I mean, that's unthinkable. That's your food bill for a month at a dorm, I think, these days, or probably more than that. So, you know, that's what was possible back then.
Jeez. That's just your business background. By the way, I went to a rival Pac-10 school.
Oh, yeah? What was that?
High up in the hills of Westwood. I went to UCLA.
So
one of the rivals. Yes, I did. I went to UCLA for my undergraduate, and then I went to University of Michigan for my graduate education. So, you know, I've had the fortune of interviewing someone from a rival from my undergraduate now, and someone from my rival from my graduate just before that. He went to Purdue.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I was there long enough ago that it was the Pac-8. So.
Oh, I was there when it was Pac-8 too. My very first year at UCLA, first year or two, it was still a Pac-8 school. Pac-8,
yes.
Still the Pac-8. Now it's the Pac-12.
I know. They can't even play each other in a season. But anyway, school politics. But anyway, so yeah, these were interesting times, you know. I mean, I graduated in the summer of love, and Kent State happened my freshman year. There's been no lack of political opportunity in my lifetime. That is for sure. It was the first bottle bill, the first Earth Day, the first International Women's Day. All of these things were happening when I was in college. So it's been a long road.
So can you tell us a little bit about the political background of political involvement and activism?
Sure. Of course, it easily goes back to college. I mean, I was a bottle bill activist. I was involved in the Black Student Union support activities when I was in college. I am not a person of color, but that didn't make any difference to me. The war, of course, I always say the war like it was the war, but the Vietnam conflict was on, and there was a lot of student protests at that time. There were minor skirmishes on our campus, but for the most part, protesting was peaceful. When I left the university, I was involved in things like we used to have a nuclear power plant here in Oregon, Trojan, and it no longer exists. So I was involved in the organized effort to decommission and remove that power plant, but certainly not as much as some of my good friends, and certainly not as much as my sister Joyce, who was a long, many-year committed, trained organizer and activist in that effort, but I certainly took that one on as well. We have a utility commission here that was nobody's friend all those years, and I was on citizens' boards and I don't want to call them activist groups, and I don't want to call it a commission. I'm trying to think of the word we used. It was very clever. But basically, you know, we were the alternative to the rate commission because we were trying not to pay the debt for the decommissioning of the nuclear power plant. Let's see, what else? My gosh.
Keep going.
I don't think... I'm not sure that there's a rally, a boycott, or a march I have missed in all these years, but I was certainly active when, more recently, during the Bush administration, when there was talk about going to Iraq. I understood maneuvers in Afghanistan in the very beginning, but I did not ever understand going to Iraq, and I was very active locally here in Let's Not Go There activities, and actually spoke at rallies and had a son who was already in the Army and was deployed twice to Iraq, and spoke as the mother of a veteran and someone serving in Iraq, and tried to put some sense into that conversation. So that one was very tough. But he made it home, and too many others have not. I'm very proud of the governor of the state of Oregon. He attended every funeral of any serviceman who died overseas, and, you know, that tradition continues to this day. I just wish there was no reason for that tradition to continue. So, right up until today.
Well, actually, which brings us up to the question that you missed of mine. How did you get involved with the coffee party?
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
yeah. You know, the coffee party as a, I mean, I've been on, the coffee party's been on my radar since day one. I thought it was great because I found the juxtaposition to the Tea Party so delightful. The idea of inciting civility and reason just charmed me. You know, I love language, I love words, and those just rang true. And my sister in Hawaii really embraced the coffee party and got me to take the civility pledge. And I think in part because we have a Tea Party brother, and there just got to be so much hostility in our family that we really had to ramp back our rhetoric and try to look for common ground. And so we were like living the national experience at Thanksgiving, you know what I mean? And I really had to look and see that it wasn't my brother I was serious with. It was that something that was fueling my brother. And I came to call that something the Robert Barron sales and marketing plan. And whenever I sort of see a glimmer of the Robert Barron sales and marketing plan, I kind of jot it down, you know. Oh, here's another element. But, you know, we could spend a whole hour talking about what that means. But it became easier and easier for me kind of sort of following the civility pledge and using my ability to form sentences to not make someone else wrong, but rather to point to the fundamental essence of the matter. And then there was sort of a convergence of things. Like there was one a year ago, I went to the rally to restore sanity, and it was so wonderful to be like in the middle of 250,000 of my very best friends is what it felt like, and to know that that many people could come together, that many people could show up, be smart, be connected, be cool, have nothing weird or awful happen, even though a lot of them couldn't even make it in. You know what I mean? Some of them were like jammed at the metro stations, and they were still cool about it. And then the Arab Spring happened. And then the debt ceiling fiasco happened. And I just found myself screaming for leadership you know, I'd be on Facebook going, who is my leader? Who is my leader? Because I could see that, you know, the president was just as jammed up as I was, that I understood how the government is structured well enough to know that, you know, the president can't do this by himself, you know. That's on purpose. He's not the king, you know. And the missing piece here was us, you know. It was us. And so all of a sudden I went, I must be my leader. And so then I looked for ways to make that happen, and I participated with other groups. I held an American Dream house meeting. I dabbled in other things, but there was something about the coffee party that just grabbed my heart. And part of it, I have to admit, was right when I was looking for leadership and focus, the coffee party was saying, hey, we've had enough, and we're going to have a march, and it's going to be on this day, and come with us. And there was just something about that that I said, sign me up. I'm going to be there. And then I started watching the Facebook pages and seeing, hey, I could participate this way, and I could participate this way, and I could participate this way. And I started sitting in on conference calls, and I started contributing in any way that I could. And I realized that I could be a contribution, that the leadership style I had, or the life experience I had, or just things I knew or things I had done could make a difference as this organization sort of bloomed from what it had been to what it wanted to be. And so I certainly had no intention of running for office in the beginning. And then I was invited to run for office, and I thought, there has to be a reason not to, for me to decline an invitation. And so I sat down with my husband, and we talked about it, and I decided, no, there is no reason not to, that this is totally consistent with what I asked the universe for. You know, I said, give me a leader, give me direction. I need to participate now, because it was clear to me that now is the time, that doors were going to close, that windows of opportunity were going to shut if the people did not act now. So, you know, the window that opened for me was the coffee party, and I jumped through.
Wow, that's like that whole line of, you know, when the Lord closes a door, you know, he opens a window.
I guess so, you know, or it's either serendipity or insanity, and I'm not sure yet which.
You know what? I don't think I would look that gift horse in the mouth if I were you.
I'm not. I'm really not. I'm not questioning it. I mean, that is one key element of decision-making. There's a point at which you just make a decision and you go. As I had the privilege of meeting Howard Schultz the other night, and one of the things he talked about was never regret mistakes, because mistakes open doors. So you often don't know something's a mistake until way after you've done it. But something will happen because you've done it. And so, you know, by the grace of whatever, there you are. And that mistake, if you want to call it that, you know, that action brought you there. So here I am.
Speaking of here you are, so you don't have an in-person story of the coffee party. You don't have, say, Eric Winery's story of attending the coffee party convention and then running activities in Chicago. You don't have Jose Gutierrez's story of having Annabelle and Eric show up to your college, your workplace, and giving a presentation. You've been someone like me who's been working almost entirely virtually.
Oh, yeah. I tell people that for me, this all exists in the cloud. It's all, which is part of the fascination for me, because I didn't, the whole world of Google, everything is new to me. And so, you know, my learning curve has been amazing, just because I haven't, when I left my firm, these things didn't exist. You know, so it's been a real hoot. I love it. And I'm having to give it up about tweeting or Twittering or, you know, I actually have a Twitter account now, and I'm learning how to use it. I swore I'd never do that. But, hey, I'm doing that because that's what we need to do.
I'm going to have to friend you on Facebook and follow you on Twitter.
Okay, well, I'm on these things. My name is Jenene K, J-N-E-N-E-K-A-Y. And, you know, I realize I'm just outing myself here, but in days gone by, I had a stalker, and so I don't use my whole name, Jenene Loudon.
Uh-huh.
So I'm Jenene K.
Well, I have, look at that. There you are. They're teen
there
mutual friends. And,
yes.
And I'm sending you an ad friend.
Very cool, very cool. Well, I want to be friends with everybody in the coffee party because I have been so enamored with, there's a combination thing of inspiration and work ethic and, but also independent nature of people that, again, just keeps me happening. It keeps me happening here.
So you decided to run because you realize you are your own leader. You are the person that you've been waiting for. Is that right?
Well, you know, in a nutshell, but I'm also a person who is this ruthless commitment to teamwork. And that sounds bizarre, I know, because everybody talks about teamwork. But the name of my company was Team. I mean, I really think that people who work together create something bigger than themselves, and that there's an ebb and flow in that. There's sometimes you're kind of in charge, and sometimes I'm kind of in charge, or it's in charge is a bad term, but I think you know what I mean. There's a sense of inspiration over there, then there's a sense of inspiration over here, and there's a time to step back and a time to step forward, but there's power in that synergy. And so while I am my own leader, I am a part of a powerful and empowering group here. And we need many sets of ears to hear. We need many sets of eyes to see. And we need the synergistic willingness to transcend whatever it is we are today to become whatever it is we will be tomorrow without knowing how to do that. And that's the that seems possible here for me.
Wow. Now, there's a couple of things I want to go talk about before we run out of time in about 10 minutes. Technically, the show lasts another half an hour beyond that, but I don't want to give you, well. Okay, good, because it really would be fair to the people that were there before you.
Sure.
But, one of the things has to do with you're running for the office of secretary.
Yes.
And I understand you have been a secretary before for government organizations. You've served on boards. And by the way, you know this, but the listeners may not. I'm currently the secretary of the transition team. So basically what you're hearing here, if you're listening, is you're hearing one secretary handing it off to the next one.
Yes, I was
going to
mention that.
Yeah.
I saw that. Yes, I'm taking the baton.
So what's the? Well, I'm not handing a baton just yet. The elections aren't over. I haven't been run yet. In fact, they're going to start on the 15th, and run to the end of the month.
Yes, correct.
But what do you see as your experience as being a secretary for an organization, and how that how do you see that working for you in the coffee party?
Well. Again, let's see. Let me click on my little screen here. So I have the structure as it's intended to be. But I think there are basic things to being a private nonprofit officer that are just inherent to being a board member. Then there are other things unique to being a secretary, and one of them is keeping track of corporate documents and keeping minutes and tracking bylaws and articles of incorporation and, stuff like that. In the job description I was given, let's see, it's right here in front of me now, there's also a particular work group that I would be assigned to, and that's the board development work group. And it says here the purpose is to continue to recruit, develop, and vet potential board members and assist sitting board members and professional development as board members. So, you know, that just screams team development to me. But then, see, that's who I am. You know, if you're a guy with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And so if you're a person who just, if you're a person who lives team, then that sounds like a request to be for team development. And looks like there's a little creativity involved here in making sure that the membership knows what the board is doing and managing annual elections. So it's interesting that my inspiration to participate would lead me to a fairly bureaucratic position. So, but, you know, that's kind of like the, in my business experience, we had a lot of compliance issues. You know, compliance with government contracting rules, compliance with auditing practice rules, compliance with all kinds of, you know, standard prudent practice for this and that. And so we sort of saw ourselves as the hoop jumping fairies, you know what I mean? It's like you hold up the hoop and you jump through and then everything works. If you resist jumping through the hoop, then nothing works. And so if you enjoy or make joy out of doing the mundane, then all things are good and all things are possible. So even though that sounds terribly bureaucratic and mundane, it's actually kind of like greases the skids to make it possible for the coffee party to do its visionary work instead of its bureaucratic work.
In other words,
I guess,
Go ahead. I was going to make an observation that the way I've been, since when I write the minutes, when I talk about the philosophy, it's we have an organization supporting a movement, not the other way around.
Yes.
That's
I would
all
agree
you have to
with
say
that
is,
completely.
Okay, good. When I hear just yes, I went, uh-oh, did I phrase something so completely that it makes for a bad interview question? But that means that you know, in a year, if in a year or two I decide to go over the board, guess what? The tables are turned. You'll be vetting me.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
But also, it's one of the things about, you know, speaking of teamwork, I've got two other questions for you. One about a team incident that I've heard you talk about before. Could you share with the listeners the story about what you did to win a soccer game once?
Oh. So I guess this came up when you guys were doing your preliminary interview and you were asking me about, how do I solve problems?
Yeah.
I gave you a sports analogy.
I used to play football. I used to actually march in a competitive drone bugle course, so I'm quite aware of what, you know, teamwork is like, but I heard that one. This is a great story. So I'm going to go let you share it.
I will. So I didn't even start playing football, or I guess soccer. Most people call it soccer, until I was 29. And I played in a very sophisticated team. We tended all to be older professional women, older meaning we were playing against 18- and 19-year-olds, and we were all in our 20s and 30s. But we did well because we figured, you know, the old age and treachery will overcome youth and skill, you know. So we played with a lot of finesse and strategy, and we made it to the finals in our league this particular year. And we were approaching the end of the match, and it was we were tied up. And for folks who understand the game, you know that a tie game is a legitimate score. 1-1 is a legitimate score in soccer, but it was not the score that we were looking for. And I was a player captain, and we had about 10 minutes left in the match, and I just said, this will never do. How about we do this? And my team was all for it. So what we did was we just shook it up. Like, I'm a left-wing forward. I went into the goal. The goalkeeper came out to the striker position. Everybody just sort of picked somebody. They switched. And we had 10 minutes of total chaos on the pitch. And, I mean, we were, it was crazy for us because nobody was anywhere they were, had ever been. But it was devastating to the opponent because they had no idea what to do. I mean, this is serious soccer. And so they had come and watched our matches. They had sized up their opposition. They knew our strategies. They knew what to do when they had had already 80 minutes of gameplay to figure out how to play it. And it was working because this match was tied. And we just undid it. And in the chaos that ensued, I say we have the advantage because we did it. You know, it was our choice. We initiated this chaos, and it made us so alive and so on task, so in the game, that indeed we ended up winning that match. And it was our totally on-fire goalkeeper who plowed that ball through and made the scoring goal, or the winning goal. And I'll tell you, back there in keeper, I couldn't have been more crazy because, like, you got to touch the ball sometimes, and that was totally out of my mindset. But to me, it was another example of better to go down in flames but going for it, you know, than to tolerate I don't want to say the mundane again. I've said that too much. But, you know, it was like we decided we would rather lose than tie. And we were going to go for it with everything that we had. And it paid off, you know. I guess it was possible not to. But, wow, what a crazy way to end the season. And it was magnificent.
And it was almost sort of zen in the sense that you used the other team's professionalism against them.
Well, if they'd unlocked, they'd have been fine because, you know, if I were them, now here's, I'm going to be the other side. I just would have moved wherever my mark went. You know what I mean? Like the woman that had played me that whole match, if I were her, I just would have gone wherever Janine went because she knew me. But instead, they stuck to their positions. Now, they had a better chance of beating us, I say, if they had moved with their mark, with their the person they had played the whole 80 minutes before. But they didn't do it. They stuck to their, you know, what had worked before, even though that was over. You could see whatever had gone on till then was over. But they stuck to their old strategy. And I was thrilled when I saw they weren't going to change because the thing that would have made it probably not work is if they had moved with us.
That's still a great story. All right, we're about out of time, and I want to ask one more question, and maybe I should go down to the control to see if it's the one that Leah has been asking at the end of every interview, and let's see if Leah is on, has called in. I'll let her ask it. If not, I'll ask it.
Oh, okay.
No, she's not called in. So it's the whole idea of, you know, where do you foresee the coffee party being in 1 year and 5 years, and how do you see, you know, you've mentioned in terms of being the magic hoop jumping fairy and making by, you know, making sure the organization works, making sure the movement works. But is that, you know, how you foresee your role and how and where the coffee party could be and what you expect the coffee party to be doing in the future?
Oh, well, I see the next year as being very, very exciting. I mean, a year from today. So first of all, the Enough is Enough rally will have occurred. I see us having, you know, we'll have an embassy in Washington, D.C. You know, they're talking about renting a house in the district. We'll have name recognition. We will have completed our state-to-state speak out. I say that in that process, we will have figured out, I mean, we're already working on it, we will figure out how to best foster and empower local affiliates, and local affiliates will just take the bit and run. I think that the whole notion of inciting civility and reason, you know, will be, what's the word? You know, it's going to, like, be spontaneously combusting. So I think our job is, as members of the board, is to make sure that all this stuff we have to do doesn't get in the way of that, you know. So it's like, you know, maybe the other analogy is like the, remember the cobbler's elves, you know, the cobbler goes to bed at night, he wakes up in the morning and all the shoes are fixed. you know, if we can make things run invisibly so that all the things that are important about what the coffee party is up to can happen with all this being seamless and in the background, then that'll be tremendous. But I see this being an amazing year.
That's just utterly inspirational. And on that
I
note,
think it is.
I want to. We've come to the end of the half hour, and I'd like to thank you very much for coming on and giving an interview. And if it weren't for the fact that it wouldn't be fair to the other interviewees and to my wife, I'd let you keep talking.
Well, thank you. And I do want to say just one last thing, if I may.
Go ahead.
Which is, I think it's important that even though some of these positions only have one person voting, I mean, running, I think it's very important for people to turn out and vote for those positions, you know, if they're so inclined to support that position, because it's kind of like the Tinkerbell factor, you know, it's like clapping if you believe, and I think the board is going to need that kind of moral support from the coffee party, so, you know, I guess you could show up and just vote for the contested positions, but by voting, you know, you're giving a thumbs up to the uncontested positions, too, and I think that that's much appreciated, and the empowerment will go a long way.
You like fae references, don't you? Fairies and elves?
I'm a grandmother.
What's that?
I'm a grandmother.
Yes, but there's something magical about you. I think we're going a little over, and I'm going to go stop the interview right now, but thank you very much, Janine, and I'd like to tell everyone that it was a very productive night interviewing Janine and Jose and Eric, and that we're going to have another night like this on Thursday, and the people scheduled for Thursday night, starting at 7:30 and going until a little after 9 o'clock, are Egberto Willis for the first half hour. Egberto, who's running for the Action Advocacy and Message position. And also Craig Dunnigan, who is running for the Internet Infrastructure position. And Carrie Helmer, who I believe is running for Development. So all of you who are listening, we're looking forward to hearing you, or having you hear this show, and to listening to the next three candidates for the board. All right, everyone, thank you very much. It's been a great night, and I'll talk to y'all later. Bye.